The Public News Service Daily Newscast for May the 6th, 2025. I'm Mike Clifford. U.S. Secretary of Defense Pete Hegseth has ordered senior Pentagon leadership to cut the number of four-star generals and admirals by at least 20% across the military, according to a memo signed by Hegseth, dated Monday and obtained by CNN. As of 2023, there were 37 four-star generals and admirals across the entire military. CNN reports in his memo, Hegseth wrote the cuts are a critical step toward removing redundant force structure to optimize and streamline leadership by reducing excess general and flag officer positions. And today, the Republican budget package on the nation's energy policy gets a closer look from the House Natural Resources Committee and the Congress.
The proposals include reducing royalty rates paid by energy companies to federal and local governments, limiting opportunities for public participation, and mandating the sale of oil and gas leases on all available public lands within 18 months. Newbridge Strategies surveyed Western voters on the importance of various public land uses, and pollster Lori Weigel says there's a trend.
It stands out, really, that providing land to be leased for oil and gas development was significantly lower than every single other attribute that we tested.
Among Montana respondents, 92% said keeping air and water clean is an important function of public lands. Outdoor recreation and providing wildlife habitat were about equally important at roughly 86%. Only 34% of Montanans said they think providing land for oil and gas development is important. I'm Kathleen Shannon.
Next up to Seattle, where the city council voted last week to put the city's democracy voucher program on the ballot to be renewed in August. Supporters of the program are looking to take it statewide.
Launched in 2017, the program gives each resident four $25 vouchers to donate to participating candidates. Data shows the program has boosted voter turnout, increased small donors fivefold, and encouraged more women and people of color to run. Spencer Olson of the nonprofit People-Powered Election Seattle says voucher programs counter nationwide voting rights rollbacks and model a more inclusive democracy.
It's proof that we can reduce the influence of big money, can expand participation, and can give regular people a stronger voice in who represents them.
People-Powered Elections has been working on a bill for next session that would bring democracy vouchers to Washington's state legislative races. Participating candidates must get a minimum number of signatures and small donations to qualify and must adhere to contribution and spending limits. I'm Isabel Charlet.
And from the Associated Press, the Trump administration says it's going to pay immigrants in the United States illegally $1,000 plus travel costs if they leave voluntarily as it accelerates its mass deportation agenda. This is Public News Service. Jewish students from Columbia University and Barnard College are speaking with members of the Congress today, and they've got a lot to say.
They'll be addressing the encampments and protests against the Israel-Hamas war, the Trump administration's attacks on Columbia University, and sharing their views on freeing international student Mahmoud Khalil. Columbia undergraduate student Sarah Boris says politicians and media outlets spread misinformation about life in the encampments, particularly that they were anti-Semitic.
It was really interesting to hear that when, as a Jewish student, I was literally doing Havdalah through the gate because I wasn't allowed on campus to practice my religion, and I was doing it with all these Jewish students that were part of the encampment and found so much meaning in it.
She says she was part of the first encampment, which lasted about 3 days. Boris says it was a spiritual time being part of a movement aligning with her values. She wants members of Congress to understand what life was like in the encampments and how it shouldn't be used in attacks on free speech. I'm Edwin J. Vieira.
And next to Indiana, where activists with the 5501 movement will hold new protests this summer against the Trump administration. More now from our Joe Ulloa.
Elisa Advani with Indiana 5501 says local organizers will lead the new events. Advani says the movement wants to fight government overreach and protect constitutional rights.
It's a national group. It was designed specifically so that there would be coordinated protests in every state on the same day, and it's grown exponentially. Now we've had protest groups pop up by the 10s, 20s, 30s across every state.
Critics say the protest exaggerates federal actions. Some argue they turn legal and policy debates into political fights.
And finally, President Donald Trump signed an executive order which could open national marine monuments to commercial fishing.
This includes the Northeast Canyons and Seamounts Marine National Monument off the coast of Cape Cod. The protected area holds an abundance of aquatic plant and animal species and serves as an ideal feeding ground for squid, whales, dolphins, and sharks. Priscilla Brooks with the Conservation Law Foundation says it's called the Serengeti of the Sea for a reason.
It's truly an amazing place. And it supports an incredible diversity of marine wildlife.
She says opening the area to fishing would sacrifice decades of scientific progress for short-term gain. Fishing groups say restrictions hurt their bottom line and that the gear they use remains far from the protected monuments below. The executive order states that America should be the world's dominant seafood leader and calls for the suspension of any regulations that burden America's commercial fishing industry. Trump has also signed an executive order specifically targeting the Pacific Islands Heritage Marine National Monument, one of the world's biggest ocean reserves just west of Hawaii. I'm Catherine Carley.
This is Mike Clifford for Public News Service, member and listener supported.
Jury selection begins today in the high-profile trial of music mogul Sean Diddy Combs, who faces charges including racketeering, conspiracy, and sex trafficking. As the deadline for Real ID approaches, Americans are scrambling to update their IDs before new rules take effect for domestic travel May 7th. Meanwhile, in Gaza, a humanitarian crisis deepens as the UN and aid groups reject a proposed Israeli-US plan for aid delivery, warning it violates international principles and endangers lives. And now, potential Medicaid cuts could have a negative impact on early childhood education professionals in Arkansas.
A report from Georgetown University Center for Children and Families shows 31% of the state's child care workers are covered by Medicaid. Nicole Carey with Arkansas Advocates for Children and Families says having health care coverage impacts the overall well-being of the educator.
Which then plays into their relationship with the kids they're serving and their longevity in the profession, and it has this ripple effect.
Arkansas has expanded Medicaid coverage. It's one of 13 states nationwide that covers more than one-third of the child care workforce through Medicaid. I'm Frieda Ross reporting.
May is Family Wellness Month, and Minnesota households are encouraged to work on goals beyond the surface level of success. One expert says family members can explore dimensions that go a long way in shaping well-being. Mike Moen reports.
University of Minnesota Extension educator Sharon Powell acknowledges that society isn't as laser-focused on career or academic success in defining how well a person or family is doing. Powell adds that with mental health a bigger priority these days, it's one way in which households can get a sense of whether or not loved ones are thriving.
You feel happy and content and like you're contributing to your family's well-being and to your community and even beyond.
Powell says if you notice sudden mood changes or a family member becomes withdrawn, it might be good to inquire about their emotional state.
A new report shows Illinois youth now have more apprenticeship and internship opportunities, with an increase in women and minority participation, but significant disparities in representation remain. Judith Ruiz Branch reports.
The study by Skills USA and Northern Illinois University found the number of women in apprenticeships has doubled since 2019. But Jason Klein with Northern Illinois University says apprenticeships and internship opportunities for women are often low-paying or unpaid, which can hinder their options in the workforce.
Lots of students then have to choose between an internship or a paid job doing something else, which may not be contributing towards their movement forward within a desired career path.
This is Public News Service. A refundable child tax credit aimed at helping families with young children was proposed by Governor DeWine's budget, but was stripped out of the Ohio House. Advocates say it's not too late for lawmakers to restore it and offer families some financial relief. Lynn-Ann Gutierrez, president and CEO of Groundwork Ohio.
This is a really, really strong policy that acknowledges the needs of families. It won't solve everything, but it is a almost $1 billion investment, and so his single largest investment in young children and families that has been proposed in his tenure.
If passed, the child tax credit would be Ohio's largest direct state investment in young children to date, providing up to $1,000 per child under age 7, at a time when more than 8 in 10 Ohio parents say inflation is forcing them to cut back on groceries. Iowa lawmakers are considering a bill that would require property owners to disclose the presence of lead water service lines during a real estate transaction. As Mark Moran reports, some of Iowa's residential water lines date back more than a century.
The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention estimates at least half of the children in the United States are at risk of lead exposure from water lines. The Iowa Environmental Council's Cody Smith says the problem is especially acute in Iowa and adds it will be extremely expensive to address.
It's estimated that fixing Iowa's lead service line issue would cost about $900 million statewide. So this is a pressing health concern for the children in our state.
Iowa is responding to a federal rule passed last year that requires all service lines that contain lead to be replaced by 2035. House File 876 would require sellers to disclose that their house has lead service lines in a real estate transaction.
As Congress prepares to vote next week on a budget bill that would repeal solar energy tax credits, Florida solar advocates warn the move would jeopardize the state economy. Tramell Gomes reports.
According to industry data, the tax credits have funded over $12 billion in clean energy projects and supported 175,000 jobs in Florida. Caleb Quaid with Tampa-based Regenerative Shift says his company's landmark solar project relies on the funding.
This project would not have been possible without these clean energy tax credits. They are currently in the process of installing what will be the largest rooftop solar project on a school in Florida history. In addition to providing lower cost of energy for Manatee School for the Arts, this project is also paying all of its laborers prevailing wages.
Opponents of the tax credits argue renewable energy should be able to compete without help from the government. Representative Vern Buchanan is facing mounting pressure to defend the solar tax credits because his district hosts many jobs related to clean energy.
This is Farah Siddiqui for Public News Service, member and listener supported.
In the first cabinet shuffle of his second term, President Donald Trump Thursday announced he is nominating Michael Waltz to be U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, while Secretary of State Marco Rubio will serve as the interim National Security Advisor while keeping his current role as well. That from ABC News. Meantime, CNBC reports on Wednesday Waltz appeared to be communicating with other Trump officials on Signal, that after President Trump discouraged using the messaging app. Next up, a new bipartisan poll looks at how Latino voters in Arizona are feeling about Trump's first 100 days in office, and pollsters describe them as frustrated.
The poll from Unidos U.S. indicates the most important issues for Latino voters continue to be the cost of living and inflation, as well as jobs and the economy, followed by housing costs and health care. Yanet Murguia with Unidos U.S. explains Latino voters are feeling dismissed, saying Trump isn't living up to his campaign promises.
They are also concerned by proposed cuts in life-saving programs such as Medicaid, Social Security, and anti-hunger programs like SNAP that millions of Latinos rely on to help mitigate the cost of living.
While Trump did make gains with Latino voters in the 2024 election, Murguia says some are having buyer's remorse as they're seeing the potential impacts of the president's policy decisions. I'm Alex Gonzalez reporting.
And a report by the National Institute for Early Education Research shows Arkansas needs to improve its reach with pre-K students.
The state fell from 6th to 8th place in preschool access for 3-year-olds and from 22nd to 24th in access for 4-year-olds. Study co-author Steve Barnett says other southern states and many across the nation are outpacing Arkansas.
Lawmakers need to focus on two things. What can Arkansas do to lift its game? How can Arkansas improve the quality of its program, for example, by ensuring every teacher has a 4-year college degree in preschool, by ensuring adequate funding?
The report also shows lawmakers decreased the money allocated for the Arkansas Better Chance, or ABC, program. I'm Frieda Ross reporting.
And for the Associated Press, a federal judge Thursday barred the Trump administration from deporting any Venezuelans from South Texas under an 18th century wartime law and said President Trump's invocation of it was unlawful. U.S. District Court Judge Fernando Rodriguez Jr. is the first judge to rule that the Alien Enemies Act cannot be used against people who the Republican administration claims are gang members invading the U.S. This is Public News Service. A Minnesota proposal is in the works that supporters say would end forced labor in correctional facilities. They note the 13th Amendment was adopted nearly 160 years ago, but they believe a form of slavery is still present in America's prisons.
Advocacy groups point to wording in the Minnesota Constitution that there should be no slavery in the state, with exceptions for punishment for a crime. They say incarcerated people are exploited by having to work for 50 cents an hour, providing them little money to pay victims back, support their families, or have resources to rebuild their lives post-release. Aaron Ernst, who served time in Minnesota, says this overshadows other reforms.
You know, the rehabilitation part is kind of there, and then the reconnection to the community is just non-existent.
The End Slavery in Minnesota Coalition is working with lawmakers on a bill for next year's session to classify these individuals as legal workers with specific rights. I'm Mike Moen.
And Montana's wildlife risk is now 74% higher than other states. Experts encourage Montanans to think ahead on Wildlife Community Preparedness Day, May 3rd.
When wildfires ignite homes, an ember or small flame is usually to blame, according to the National Fire Protection Association. That means prep work in the immediate zone or the 5 feet surrounding a home is effective. Chief Engineer Ann Cope with the Insurance Institute for Business and Home Safety says that zone is critical because that's where wind eddies deposit embers and where flammable materials, including mulch, bushes, and stacked firewood tend to be.
When you bring those two things together, boom, that's where that teeny little fire is going to start that you could have just stomped out with your boot. That is sadly what's going to take down a house.
Cleaning roofs and gutters, installing metal mesh screening over open vents, repairing damaged shingles and window screens, and removing items stored under porches are simple ways to prepare for wildfire season. I'm Kathleen Shannon.
Finally, peak bird migration is underway in Indiana. Rare species are moving through parks, forests, and backyards across the state, and more Hoosiers are watching.
Indiana lies along a major migratory flyway. Experts say it's one of the best states to spot birds in spring. Marion University biology professor David Benson is one of the world's top birders. He says the hobby helps people understand what birds need to survive.
If you're interested in a particular bird species, you need to know what habitat they live. We need to protect some of these different habitats. Some of the birds that are declining the most here in Indiana are the prairie species.
Up to 150 species can pass through in a single day. Top viewing spots include Eagle Creek Park, Fort Harrison, and southern Indiana's deep forest ravines. This story was produced with original reporting from Enrique Sines for Mirror Indy. I'm Joe Ellery reporting.
This is Mike Clifford for Public News Service. Member and listener supported. Find your trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Welcome to 2025 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
We will give you this money that you can leave today. It's the safest way. You will not be arrested. You will not be detained. And we will give you that free flight.
Homeland Security spokesperson Trisha McLaughlin says as immigration enforcement intensifies, the government will pay unauthorized migrants $1,000 to self-deport. Each forced deportation costs taxpayers more than $17,000. President Donald Trump's harsh policies and rhetoric has seemed to reduce the number trying to get in, and a few are already leaving on their own. Democratic Arizona Senator Ruben Gallegos says it would be better for illegal immigrants to pay a $5,000 fine, go through a background check, and get work visas, dependent on good behavior. Surprising many, the White House is asking a federal court to drop a case against abortion medications. The case, brought by several red states, would have reverse broad access to the medicines granted by the FDA. Meanwhile, the administration has asked the Supreme Court to grant DOJ access to sensitive Social Security data. Democrats and senior groups are protesting that, as well as the nomination of Frank Bisignano to lead the agency. Nancy Altman is the president of the advocacy group Social Security Works.
And I can tell you, it's gone through wars, pandemic. It has never seen a threat like Donald Trump, Elon Musk, and Frank Bisignano. They are decimating Social Security.
Billionaire Elon Musk has promoted the falsehood that millions of dead Americans are getting checks, which Altman says comes from basic mistakes about the system. The full Senate will vote on Bisignano today. Senate Democrats want much stronger consumer protections in a cryptocurrency bill. They say the current legislation would aid Trump family efforts to profit from crypto. The president has drawn scorn for offering to host people who buy large holdings in his private firm at the White House. Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth is ordering the number of high-ranking military officers reserves be cut by a fifth. There are now nearly 40 four-star generals and admirals. The House Committee on Natural Resources is considering reversing Biden-era limits on public land oil and gas leasing. But Russell Coleman with the Nevada Wildlife Federation says new polling finds most Westerners oppose more drilling.
Our habitat and wildlife populations are starting to show that ignoring conservation, sustainability, and sound science have a price.
Activists with the 5501 movement say they'll protest against Trump this summer. Alisa Advani with the Indiana chapter says they plan on expanding beyond state houses and into smaller communities.
It's a national group. It was designed specifically so that there would be coordinated protests in every state on the same day, and it's grown exponentially.
Finally, Canada's new prime minister is set to visit the White House. Commerce Secretary Howard Lutnick says the meeting could end the trade war, but calls the negotiations really complex. I'm Alex Gonzalez for Pacifica Network and Public News Service.
What someone wants and what is reality and what the Canadian people clearly have stated, virtually without exception, is this will never, ever happen.
In his first press conference since winning election, Canadian Prime Minister Mark Carney repeated they won't become the 51st American state. Carney's Liberal Party won a huge come-from-behind victory by campaigning against President Donald Trump's trade war and demands to make Canada part of the U.S. This comes after 60% of Puerto Ricans voted last year to have a ballot referendum on statehood. That could only happen through an act of Congress, which looks unlikely. Meanwhile, during an interview with NBC's Meet the Press, Trump was noncommittal about who gets due process under the 5th and 14th Amendments. When asked about U.S. citizens and green card holders wrongly deported in some cases to an El Salvador supermax prison, Trump refused to say if they should have legal protections as granted in the Constitution. Courts have ruled clearly they do. Trump is ordering the Federal Bureau of Prisons to not only reopen California's Alcatraz prison, but to expand it as well. The Justice Department is suing Hawaii, Michigan, New York, and Vermont for laws addressing climate change. State climate superfund laws mean fines for the largest greenhouse gas emissions, but a new White House executive order charges the Attorney General with counteracting such moves. Kit Kennedy with the Natural Resources Defense Council says the AG's lawsuits are baseless.
They run afoul of the Constitution and multiple federal laws, which make clear states have the authority to shape their own energy and environmental pathways.
The DOJ says the state's actions violate the Constitution and are preempted by the Clean Air Act, which calls on the EPA to regulate power plant pollutants. New York's law is on track to collect up to $75 billion for polluting companies over 25 years. A new study says it's now possible to pinpoint specific companies that can be held accountable for climate change. Report co-author Justin Mankin with Dartmouth College says his team calculated a price tag for one climate hazard, extreme heat caused by carbon dioxide and methane emitted by more than 100 companies over 3 decades. He compares it to drug makers' role in opioid addiction and says they haven't been excused because they make breakthrough medicines and vaccines.
It doesn't absolve them for their role in, say, generating the opioid crisis. And courts ruled they had a role in generating the opioid crisis and needed to compensate harmed individuals for that.
Last month, the Department of Education shut the regional Head Start office for Michigan and neighboring states, putting staff on administrative leave. Advocates worry cuts to Head Start could derail a successful and growing Michigan school readiness program. Steve Barnett with the National Institute for Early Education Research says it's coming just as the state is struggling to fund preschool for more than 40,000 students.
These reports of potential further cuts come at a time when we know the pandemic funds will go away because the emergency has receded, but states still have to come up with the dollars to fill those in.
Critics argue the program's short-term gains in literacy and social and emotional development fade by first grade and say early childhood education should be handled at the state or local level.
So that is the miracle of modern technology and social media. So that is an exciting moment here.
At a press briefing, State Department spokesperson Tammy Bruce was caught off guard by President Donald Trump announcing Mike Waltz is the new UN ambassador nominee. Initial reports had said Trump would fire the now former White House National Security Advisor for including journalist Jeffrey Goldberg in a Signal group chat about battle plans against the Houthis in Yemen. Secretary of State Marco Rubio will be the acting NSA until a replacement is found. During Trump's first 100 days, he signed nearly 140 executive orders, more than any previous president. Michigan State political scientist Matt Grossman says there's a trend around the world where countries move toward authoritarianism when elected leaders undermine democracy by pushing the limits of executive power.
They see this global pattern where it's not the case that you have to have a revolution to change the governing system. The executive branch takes more and more power. You sort of slowly descend from a democratic starting point.
The president's opponents have filed more than 250 lawsuits against his policies. A bipartisan poll finds Latino voters are frustrated by his first 100 days. Nearly 50% strongly disapprove of Trump's job performance. The top issues they cited are the cost of living and inflation, jobs, and the economy. But Ray Serrano with the League of United Latin American Citizens says about half say they're worried about being targeted for immigration enforcement. He says initial optimism for the administration is quickly dissipating, even among those Latinos who voted for him.
What we thought was securing the border now translates to Kilmar, Abrigo Garcia, Jocelyn Rojo, like these stories that just echo throughout our communities and haunt us. It shows a new face of cruelty and lack of due process.
Serrano says it's possible many Latino voters are becoming disillusioned by both major political parties, but he adds the poll depicts the rise and immediate fall of the possible Trump Latino Democrat. Voters in a number of states also say they're souring on how Trump's mass deportation agenda is being carried out. Florida's Operation Tidal Wave is being described as a success by Governor Ron DeSantis, but immigrant families say the rights of the 1,100 people reportedly taken into custody are being ignored. Renata Bozzetta with the Florida Immigrant Coalition points to what she calls constitutional violations and the lack of information.
When these stories are not given to us with the detail and the transparency that they deserve, we have various questions, including, did these individuals have the right to due process?
Meanwhile, a Texas federal court has struck down the administration's use of the Wartime Alien Enemies Act to deport accused gang members. Judge Fernando Rodriguez Jr. was appointed by Trump and is the first to rule on the merits of using the 1798 law. 19 states are suing the Trump administration for withholding education funding unless they comply with executive orders to end diversity, equity, and inclusion programs. Educators in states like Connecticut say historic underfunding is already causing larger class sizes and lower teacher wages. I'm Edwin J. Vieira for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
For the Daily Yonder and Public News Service, this is the news from rural America. Getting to college and graduating can be harder for rural students. Smaller communities often have fewer resources and longer drive times even to visit. But an effort called the Rural Talent Lab is taking a charter bus into rural communities across 5 southern states to listen to students' needs. Lab director Andrew Korosik says men in the higher ed group are even ditching their neckties.
We're coming here and we're intentionally spending the night because it's important for you to see us leaving here in the morning, not running out of here right after the meeting's over.
Korosik says they want to build a relationship addressing the needs and desires of each rural community. And he says they'll stay flexible with solutions.
All right, so we've got these 4. 3 of them worked, 1 of them didn't. We're ready to try something else.
The high prices at Alaska's rural grocery stores show how fragile the state's food system is. Ilana Newman reports that some communities are leaning on traditional subsistence strategies like hunting and foraging.
Fewer than 1 in 5 Alaskan towns are connected by road year-round, as Peter Heckendorn reported in the Daily Yonder.
Food comes into Anchorage either by boat or by plane, and then it's delivered out to remote Alaska on small planes. And there are all sorts of things that can disrupt that supply chain.
Native Alaskans have long lived off the land. But he says climate change, government policy, and economic pressures like commercial fishing can make that hard. Heckendorn found communities are now sharing innovations and traditions online, at workshops, and in community gardens.
A lot of rural communities in the lower 48 could look to Alaska, where people have had to make do in a different way.
I'm Ilana Newman.
Cherokee is an endangered language, but you'd never know listening to students at North Carolina's New Kittawa Academy. For 20 years, the school has run Cherokee immersion, preschool through 6th grade. Dr. Hartwell Francis is their curriculum director.
There's a very cultural need to have Cherokee language, to keep poetry of Cherokee language alive. They are recreating their cultures after a devastating loss.
The Cherokee language is thousands of years old, but grew critically endangered by the late 20th century after Native children were sent to boarding schools for forced assimilation. Francis says the Academy's 100 students are guarding something priceless for their people.
I guess you can think about it as guarding treasure. A language is a community's greatest cultural creation.
A lack of teaching materials led Francis to partner with Western Carolina University, where college students create hand-printed picture books on topics like Cherokee myths and legends or the ecology of Western North Carolina rivers. For the Daily Yonder and Public News Service, I'm Roz Brown. For more rural stories, visit dailyyonder.com.